Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Ron Siebert.
Hello.
Welcome to Berg Vivant. It's good to be chatting with you, sir, and cheers.
Thank you
cheers
very much.
Cheers to you.
Thank you, Brian.
Here in Frick Park on a beautiful day, we are so fortunate to have so many green spaces like this in Pittsburgh. You'll be performing here.
Yes, we will. I think we do 2 weekends here, then 2 weekends at other park, Arsenal, and I don't remember the other park offhand that we're doing it at.
You get around. I read that on your bio.
We do.
Or somewhere I read that about you. I don't know.
I'm what's called peripatetic. I get around a lot. I've worked in 67 theaters professionally all across America. I say from Broadway to Boca Raton, from Sarasota to Sacramento.
Isn't that a song? That sounds like some sort of like Gershwin tune.
I think it's called
Boca Raton to Boston.
Route 66.
I've been everywhere. I've played everywhere. Yeah, we'll work on that.
That's
I'll talk
right,
to your
yes.
agent about it. But you're from Wisconsin originally, right?
I'm originally from Kenosha, Wisconsin, the home of jockey underwear.
You know, I never knew that.
That's right. Jockey Underwear is from Kenosha, Wisconsin. What else? American Brass, the old Nash Motor Company, which was run by Mitt Romney's father, George Romney, when it became American Motors.
Mm-hmm.
What else is in Kenosha? Kenosha is the home of, he was born in, Orson Welles was born in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
There you go.
He was smart. He left at 6 months old.
So is that what propelled you out of Kenosha? Is not enough work for a working actor?
None at all. Well, you're close to Chicago. You're right in between Chicago
sure.
and Milwaukee on Lake Michigan. So you could possibly work in those markets. But I went to graduate school at Brandeis University outside of Boston. So I was on the East Coast. I had an older brother who was an actor who was in New York City, Charles Siebert, who had a wonderful career. So I said, well, I'll go to New York City. And I had gotten lucky. While I was in graduate school, I had already gotten into equity. So by the time I moved to New York, I was already in the union, you know.
There you go, yeah.
Which I thought would take me 5 years. It took me like 5 minutes to get to the union. I got lucky. I had a teacher who ran a summer theater, professional summer theater, and he offered me a contract. And he said, if you take this contract, you can join the union. So between my first and second years in graduate school, I got into the equity.
There you go. You know how I know you're a professional?
How?
Is when you sat down, you chose what side of the microphone you were going to be on.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I did a lot of work in New York in commercials and soap operas and industrial films. And I always felt I looked better from this side, so I took this side. And I said, what did I tell you about bulletproof, right?
Right, that was the term, and I had never heard that. Bulletproof means?
Bulletproof means. I got that. I was reading a biography of Lily Palmer, who was the wife of Rex Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, years and years ago. She was a beautiful woman, but she was having one of those studio portrait pictures taken for publicity, and the photographer took her picture. He said, let me see your left profile. He said, you're not bulletproof. She said, what does that mean, I'm not bulletproof? He said, bulletproof means that you're good from any angle. You look good from any angle. And I never felt I looked good from this angle, so I always want to be filmed this. Now, you, on the other hand, are bulletproof.
You think so? I mean, I'm going to find out, because typically I'm on that side, so I'm going to watch this, and I'm going to be like, gee, what looks better? And if nobody recognizes me in this episode, then I'll be like, oh, yeah, not bulletproof.
I'm not bulletproof.
But really, seeing you from this side, I think, you know, they're equally, you know, very, very nice.
Thank
and
you,
And you put a beard
you.
On for this.
Yes, I grew. This it's been about 5 years since I had a beard. Last time I grew one was for a play called Ruined, which was done at the Florida Repertory Theater, Florida Studio Theater. I'm sorry, in Sarasota, and I grew one then. But I colored it, you know, so I looked. It was brown. Now for King Lear. King Lear says, he says, I'm a very foolish, fond old man, 40 and upwards, not an hour more nor less. So he says he's over 80 years old.
Wow.
So, you know, I hit the curb. I let the beard go gray on me.
So, you know, you seem to do a lot of work all around you, but your name's familiar here in Pittsburgh. You seem to work here often.
I've done quite a few shows around the Pittsburgh area. I worked at the Public a number of years ago. We did As You Like It there. I've worked for Off the Wall Theater. I've worked for Picked. I've worked for Unseen Shakespeare. Who else did I work for here? And of course, I've worked with PSIP, Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Park. Did the Friar Lawrence. It was the first time I had worked in this kind of environment, you know, outside. And I thought, oh my God, this is going to be really cool. I had more fun. Because, I mean, you're making your entrance. You're saying, oh, excuse me, sir, I have to make an entrance. Wait, do you mind if I step on your blanket?
Now, how do you say that in Shakespearean text?
Oh. Dost thou mind if I somehow step on thy blanket or something?
Right. So you will be, of course, playing King Lear in King Lear with Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the
yes,
Parks, performing
yes.
outdoors. Now, which you've done before.
Which I've done, yeah.
And, yes, it does present some interesting scenarios. For example, if it rains, what do you do?
Well, I guess they'll cancel it if it's a heavy, heavy rain. But I think they said they'll play if it's a light rain.
Now, for Lear, I think that would just enhance everything that's going
blow,
on.
Oh, winds crack your cheeks, rage blow. Yes, the storm.
Now, was that your Lear voice? Were you getting a sample there?
Does it sound different than my real voice?
Maybe it's just the Shakespearean text, you know, because it's hard to speak Shakespeare, I don't know, in a casual way.
It is.
Am I articulating that correctly? But you know what I mean.
Yes, you're right. Yes, it is. But it's so brilliantly written. I mean, it's like, I always say Shakespeare is the greatest composer we have. Because his language, the sound of his language is so beautiful. And he leads you through these moments, through all these wonderful emotional changes and physical changes so brilliantly. It's like a score, like a musical score that you have to learn to read, you know. Which takes a lot of work and a lot of diligence. And I've been fortunate in the past to have had some wonderful teachers, Shakespearean teachers, and I love working on it. The lines, knock wood, seem to come easier to me because it's poetry. And the sound of it is so rich, you know, it's like learning a song.
I think a lot of times, you know, especially nowadays, in America especially, some people might be afraid of it, like it's too above them or inaccessible.
Yes,
but really, when you
yes.
get over that and realize how beautiful it is, it just like you said, it's poetry
yes.
and very accessible.
Very accessible. Because it's the emotional content is so rich. And also, what occurred to me recently, I am going on. I'm sorry, Brian. I hope I'm not rattling too much.
That's yet. What this is for. I'm here to talk to you. This is gems. You're throwing out gems.
Gems here. The thing I realized recently, how we always think of the language, but actually the language is only in service to a greater purpose, which is the plot, the story, mm-hmm. the fable, the story itself, you know, what's going on between these human beings. And oddly enough, I said, God, that's what the language is really there for, to propel that story, to tell that story.
Now, this story in particular, King Lear, mm-hmm. have you ever played Lear before?
I've never have. No, I played Macbeth, I played Cassius and Julie. Do you know an actor named Michael Gross? He played the father on Family Ties with
yes.
Michael J. Fox. He and I did he did Brutus, I did Cassius and Julius Caesar once. He was wonderful, funny, funny guy.
Yeah,
wonderful.
You've got some notables in your past, folks that you've worked
all right,
for.
You're going to get my best story. You ready for
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
let's name drop.
Story.
Let's hear it all.
All right. We did a production of Jane Eyre, based on the novel Jane Eyre, at the Paper Mill Playhouse in Millburn, New Jersey. Now, there were a lot of young girls in the show because the play takes the story takes place partly in a workhouse for all these young girls, mm-hmm. you know, these poverty-stricken young ladies. So one night I hear this on my dressing room door. I say, come in. And this young, beautiful girl comes in. She says, Ron, may I speak to you? She was like 14 years old. I said, of course. She said, I have an audition tomorrow for a New York agent, and I have to do a monologue for this agent. Would you help me with the monologue? I said, sure, I'd be happy to. So we worked. She was very nice. We worked, and she was very talented. And then finally we were done, and she said, thank you so much, Ron. I said, you're welcome. And as she left, I said to myself, she's such a lovely young girl and so talented. I hope something good happens to her. Anne Hathaway.
Wow. Do you keep in touch?
Oh, yeah, I wish.
Oh.
Although she did say when she won the Academy Award, she said, I'd like to thank all the actors who have helped me. And I said, yes, I was one of those.
Finally, there it is.
Recognition.
And where would she be without that help
without
and
that
assistance,
help.
You know?
She would have
those
gotten
those Siebert touches, you know? And I'm talking about really on the monologue, by the way.
And I never knew why she asked me. I mean, I hadn't been teaching or anything at that time. Later, I did some teaching at Carnegie Mellon, but I had never taught. And I thought, why did she ask me? Geneva for that. I don't know why. She was very, very sweet. Very sweet. Just the way she is now.
Good one.
Yeah.
Good one.
Is that a good one?
Yeah. And you, James Earl Jones, you've worked with.
I worked with James Earl Jones. We had a wonderful time. He and I became very close for some reason. He would confide in me, and remember he said, you know, I'm putting on some weight here. I said, well, you are a little bit. He always said, call me Jimmy. He was very sweet. I said, if he lived in England, he would be called Lord Jimmy. He'd be a lord by now, because he's such a wonderful man and so talented. And I said, Jimmy, you know, you live in Chelsea here. I lived in Manhattan at the time, and I used to go to this place called the McBurney Y on 23rd Street. And I said, you live very close to the McBurney Y. Why don't you join the Y? You can start jogging, lose some weight. He said, I think I'll do that. I don't know if he ever did or not, because his weight only got more as he got older. But he was a wonderful, wonderful man to work with. I love. He's dyslexic.
I didn't know that.
He did a play. We did the play called The Iceman Cometh, and it's 4 hours long. And he had to learn all those lines. He has a monologue in the final act that's like 45 minutes long.
Wow. Well, by then, the Iceman goeth.
Jeez. The Iceman goeth. Everybody goeth. But the play takes place in a bar. I don't know if you know this play, but it takes place in a bar, and it's all about these alcoholics who are trying to quote-unquote dry out, get on the wagon.
I think I've lived this. That's how I know it. I was in it for real. Yeah.
So they had to sit and listen to this monologue, and there was one actor who was a wonderful man, very sweet man, but he lived on vodka, Marlboro cigarettes, and Snickers bars, and he was very, very, very big. So he was not in good shape. So when Jones would launch into the monologue, you'd start hearing this. This actor would fall asleep.
Oh, no.
So Jones would go up to him and he'd start shaking the guy to try to keep him
during
awake.
Live show.
During a live show. So finally, for some reason, he came to me, Jones, and he said, do you think I should talk? I won't mention the guy's name, although he did pass away. He said, do you think I should talk to him? And I said, yeah, I think so. He said, yeah, I think it would be good for him to stay awake during the show.
Maybe.
And he was a big star at this time, Jones. And he could have ripped this guy's head up, but he knocked on his dressing room door. I happened to be there listening. And he said, and the guy said, yes. He said, it's Jimmy. He said, oh, come in, Jimmy. He said, would you mind? He said, it's probably my fault. This is the way Jones said, probably my fault. But if there's anything I can do to make you stay awake during my speech, please let me know. I think it would be good for the show.
Classy.
Very. He was a classy man.
Do you have a James Earl Jones impersonation?
No, my God. No, no. That voice. May the force be with you. You know?
That was good. Okay. I had one other.
Since we said may the force be with you, years ago, long before you were born, and they started ATM machines.
I remember them.
Do you remember?
Yeah, they're still around.
They're still around. There's a bank called Manufacturers Hanover's Trust in New York on Columbus Avenue and 86th Street, and I lived right in that area. And one day I was lined up at the bank, you know, to use the ATM machine. A bunch of us were lined up, and this guy's in front. He's putting his card in. The card comes up. Puts the card in. The card comes up. Does this 4 or 5 times. He's got a couple of little children with him. Finally, he looks around at all of us. He says, does anybody know how to work this machine? And it was Mark Hamill. He was from Star Wars. You know, what was his name? Luke.
Right, with all that futuristic equipment.
Yeah, and he couldn't use an ATM machine. It was kind of ironic. He was a very sweet guy. Very nice.
Did you help him out?
Yes, somebody helped him out. Okay. I don't remember if I did or not, but finally he got his money.
Now, soap operas are on your resume as well, correct?
Yeah, I did a lot of soap operas.
Soap opera to Shakespeare. Anything in common
know,
there?
I know. Be in the moment. That's what's in common. We always say in acting, be in the moment.
And I think you've done them all. Days of Our Lives, All My Children, right?
Go on, yeah. Days of Our Lives, All My Children, One Life to Live, Guiding, One Life to Live.
That's like the whole afternoon lineup right there.
Loving, Ryan's Hope. I was asked to be a regular. They offered me a contract on Ryan's Hope, and I said, I talked to my agent, and I said, I don't think I want to do that because I like to go out of town and do regional theater. I want to do the great plays, you know. So I turned down the soap opera, which meant I missed out on a lot of money. But you know, I've done what I wanted.
Are you happy?
Yes, I'm happy with the work I've done, where my career has taken me. I've been able to make a living as an actor for many, 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 many years, so I can't complain.
So where's home now? I mean, you travel a lot. Where do you hang your hat?
Yes, I have a home in Murrysville, and I have an apartment in New York City, a studio apartment on the Upper West Side.
Right.
So I go back and forth, and I travel out of town, you know, wherever the work takes us. You know, we're like go with the wind.
Gypsies,
yes.
But not before Lear is through.
No.
So let's talk about this show in particular. As far as Shakespeare tragedies go, what is your absolute favorite tragedy of Shakespeare's?
That's a good question. My favorite tragedy. I loved playing Macbeth. I really loved that. It was so beautiful. It's the action is so clear and it's beautifully, beautifully done, beautifully written. I love that. This is great. Lear is great. It's like the last great tragedy, I believe, that Shakespeare wrote.
I think that one's favorite Shakespeare tragedy says a lot about them.
Yes. Well, I like Macbeth because I really related to it, and it went well. It was a good production. We toured the state of Illinois with it, which I love doing. So I think that may be, well, I don't know. I'll have to see how this plays.
Right.
I'm enjoying this a lot, having a lot of fun in this show.
Good cast?
Yes, good cast. Lots of wonderful words to learn. So it's a gift. Someone once said we should all learn poetry because, like, if you're waiting for a bus and you've got a long time to wait, you'll have something to think about.
There you go.
So I think about Shakespeare a lot.
Now, what do you find to be a unique challenge of playing this iconic character in particular?
Do you know the actor Laurence Olivier? Do you remember
him? Oh, yes, very well.
Olivier, someone once said to Olivier, what is the most important thing an actor needs? And he said, stamina. And that's true. You know, when you get to be my age, a little older here, it takes tremendous strength and stamina. I mean, I work out every day. I do all kinds of physical things to try to just keep my body in shape. And the lungs, you know, you need to keep your voice in shape. So that's the biggest challenge, frankly, is the stamina. Learning the lines, there are a lot of lines, of course, so that's part of it. But I worry more about just the strength, just having the fiber to do it.
We're rooting for you.
Thank you. I am too. But on the other hand, he's old, so you can say, listen, he doesn't have this. He's old, but you can do whatever he wants.
Ron was so convincing. We really believed he was decrepit. Bravo!
That's funny. I was in a show one time called Dancing at Luna's up in Rochester, mm-hmm, yeah. Wonderful play. And one of the actresses in it had done it on Broadway, and she had done it a lot, so she was kind of a little bit over it. She was playing a character called Agnes who sits in a rocking chair. And one afternoon, she fell asleep on stage. She didn't have any lines.
Jeez, you need some coffee on the set, the folks you're working for.
But we had a talk back with the audience that day, and one of the audience members raised their hand, and they asked this girl, boy, you were so convincing. How did you do that? And she just kind of blushed and said, well, I worked at it.
Practice, yeah. Practice. I do it every night.
It was so... But, I mean, that's it. You know, you can do anything, especially when you're playing like this old guy. Say, look, I'm tired. I can just stop here for a moment, catch my breath.
Now, is it going to be a difficult hurdle performing in different parks? I mean, are you going to have time to kind of adapt the show to different locations?
Well, we've done that. When I did Romeo and Juliet, we did that. And we got there a little early and set it up. It's pretty much the same throughout, you know, the parks. The only thing, I have a scene where I have to carry Cordelia, who's being played by a wonderful young actor named Nick Benninger. Nick is playing Cordelia and the Fool, so I have to carry Nick at one point where he has Cordelia, she has died, and I'm carrying him. So my only demand is that I'm moving downhill. Yeah. I don't want to be carrying uphill. That's the only thing I worry about.
The relationship between Lear and the Fool in this show has always really fascinated me.
It is.
I think it's one of the iconic pieces of this. Almost absurd that royalty would be reduced to palling around in in the wilderness with a clown.
Yeah. Yes. It's like that wonderful Driving Miss Daisy. Remember that?
Yeah.
Where at the end, near the end of the play, she says to Hoke, played by Morgan Freeman, in which she says, Hoke, you're my best friend. And throughout the play, she's been kind of like angry at her son for hiring Hoke, and she's kind of very short
with
Hoke. And it's the same way, like you say, Royal, she's like the woman, she's the head of the household, and he's like, quote unquote, a servant. And yet by the end, she says, you're my best friend. And I think that's the way it is with Lear and the Fool. The Fool is always there trying to buoy him up, to make him feel better, to pull him out of his funk, out of his depression, And so he really relies on the Fool.
So what about King Lear in particular really lends itself to being performed in a park, in the outdoors?
That's a good question. It's hard to answer that. I don't know. Why did we perform Romeo and Juliet? I guess because it's just a nice thing to perform out in a park.
For sure.
Because people can walk by and they can stop or they can move on or they can get up and leave or they can stay.
We hope they'll stay.
We hope they'll stay. Because the best is at the last.
Well, we know they will with performances like these in store, certainly.
Yeah. Well, a wonderful group of actors. Most of these people I've worked with in one capacity or another, and they're just terrific people and hardworking actors and good actors.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, right beyond the camera shot here, we've got them rehearsing fight choreography. So there's going to be swords. And,
that's right, yes.
A lot of work going into that, certainly.
Yes, yeah. It's all there. It's all the play opera is everything, as Shakespeare invariably does. I'm thinking I did a Titus Andronicus once, and there's a wonderful story about Titus Andronicus with Vivian Leigh, you know, Scarlett O'Hara, playing a character named Lavinia, and her husband Laurence Olivier playing Titus Andronicus. Now, Lavinia has had her tongue cut out and her hands cut off by these bad people. I can't remember exactly their names, Aaron or something. So they go up to say, Lavinia, who did this to you? And she can't speak, and she can't. So she picks up some sticks between her wrists, you know, and she writes in the sand the name. Now, one afternoon, or one performance, Vivian Leigh was performing, you know, Lavinia, and Noel Coward, the famous Noel Coward, was in the audience, and she was very, very nervous. So when it came to the scene where she had to pick up the stick, she was having trouble because she was so nervous about God. And finally, after, you know, tremendous effort, she picks up the sticks. So after the show, Coward came backstage, you know, to congratulate people and say hello. And he went up to Vivian Leigh, and she said, well, how did you like the show? How did you like the show, Noel? He said, butter stumps.
Noel Coward could eviscerate you with two words.
Oh, my God.
Or one.
He was witty. Butter stumps.
All right. Well, I hope that, you know, everybody that you're working with is well-trained at picking up sticks, and they've got that covered, so no mishaps there.
Yes.
But looking forward to seeing it. It runs pretty much all throughout the month of September.
Every weekend in September,
at a different park.
Yeah, we're here twice. The first week, which is the 5th, and then the last week of September. I'm not sure what the dates would be. The 27th, maybe? So here twice, and then in two other parks.
And we'll have it all listed on the site, and of course, then go to the Pittsburgh and the Shakespeare in the Parks website for that information. We'll link to it as well.
Great,
but,
Brian.
Absolutely looking forward to it. So break a leg as they say.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.